The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
My next guest, who's sitting here with me in the studio, has sold over 12 million books worldwide, and those books have been published in more than 30 languages. And her twisty-turny storylines leave you turning the pages long after you promised yourself that you'd turn in for the night. And I say that from personal experience. Her new book is called It Could Have Been Her. And she's with me here in the studio, Lisa Jewell. Lisa, the reason I said that about, you know, the book, I forgot to bring your book with me today.
Oh.
Because I was very late last night, way past my bedtime. And you do that thing where you write nice short chapters.
Yes.
So I say to myself, I'll just do one more. I'll just do one more. And the next thing, it's 11 o'clock.
That is done on purpose.
I'm delighted to hear
That's
it.
My dream image is of a reader with their eyes kind of, you know, exhausted and trying to go to sleep, but they can't. So
it's
thank
you. It's such a skill, though, isn't it? Did you have to learn how to do that for thriller type books?
I think it comes naturally because I write without a plan. I have to keep myself in the game. I have to keep myself invested in the story because I don't know what the story is until I've written it.
Don't you?
No, I haven't got a clue. So I'm constantly having this feeling like something needs to happen. Something needs to happen. Somebody needs to say something strange or somebody needs to discover something. Otherwise, this story's not going to move itself along. So that just lends itself very well to a reader's psychology when they're reading.
So when you see authors who plot out their storylines and they've everything charted, that's not you. That doesn't work for you.
Isn't it incredible that we all do the same job and we all end up with the same product at the end of it, but we all do it in such different ways. And yes, there are some writers who are absolutely anal about planning in advance and writing long outlines, colour coding, whiteboards, mood boards, research. And then there are writers like me, many writers like me, who just open up their laptop and type chapter one and then just get going and see what happens.
But do you need a spark? Do you need something to fire off?
There is always a spark. And when you actually get to the end of one of my books, you wouldn't know what the spark was because the spark gets lost in what actually ultimately becomes a full-length 90,000-word story. But the spark is the thing that has to get me onto the page.
Last night, my heart was thumping when I was reading about Jane, the main character, 25 years ago, having had a few drinks on her own, not feeling great in a pub, having a chat with this man who says to her, "Oh, come and work with my family as a nanny." And she gets in the car and she goes with him. And it's a very, very strange, odd situation that she finds herself in the house. Was that the spark for that book?
You would think, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I thought it was.
Actually, that got added in on the third or fourth draft of the book because my editor had said, Jane turns out to be the sort of amateur sleuth of the book. And she said, I don't know what her motivation is for being so invested in this missing girl case. Why is she so invested? And I had to find a reason for her to be invested. I thought, what about if the house that the girl's gone missing from is a house that she remembers from her long distant youth? So that's where that came from. So that was absolutely the antithesis of the spark.
That's so interesting.
It was a fix at the end.
It was a fix because I said, my physical reaction is telling me that this is really pivotal.
Yeah.
Well, it is really pivotal, pivotal, I suppose, now, but it wasn't what drew you to the story.
The spark was the dog. And that's just ridiculous. So actually, if you start reading this book, you'll set off thinking you're reading cozy crime because it starts with Jane, who is my main character. She's 55 years old. She lives out in the countryside in the middle of nowhere with her four dogs. She's walking them on her land and this little white Westie appears from nowhere, you know, a lost dog. She takes it to the vet, has the chip checked. Turns out that this dog actually comes from London. So she decides to take a day trip to London to return this dog to its owner. And as she approaches the house, that's when she realises, and now you know the truth of this, that this happened later down the road, that that was the house that she visited when she was in her 20s with the strange man who made her feel very uncomfortable. So actually, it was the dog.
The dog that took you into the story.
But really, the dog is nothing to do with the story. Lovely dog, but not really pivotal to the meat of the story, just gets the story going.
And Jane is a woman in her 50s.
She's 55, yes.
She's lived a life.
She has.
She's still living a life.
She's still living her best life.
Still
absolutely.
Looking for the old adventure, isn't she?
Yes, and, yes. She's certainly not looking for a man or a happy ever after. She's just looking for the next chapters of her life.
I
She's
loved her
looking
for that
to see,
reason.
You know, you get into your mid-50s and you think, I don't want to sound morbid, but you think I've got another good 20 years. What are those next 20 years going to look like? And that's exactly where we find her, at that spot of like, you know, I'm healthy, I'm fit, I'm here, I'm alive, I've survived so much. I'm awesome looking. I'm so cool. Everybody loves me. But what are the next 20 years of my life going to be about? So that's where we find Jane. And I just think that's a very interesting juncture in a woman's life.
And if we go back then to None of This Is True, which was another big hit for you, that's sort of based around the True podcast world, isn't it? Was that something that you were listening to, those podcasts?
I would say less podcasts and more Netflix documentaries. I very much wanted to recreate that sense of unease and disbelief that you have when you're watching those strange Netflix documentaries about people all around the world being manipulated and coerced and controlled and believing the lies of scammers. And I just wanted to...
So you're sitting there going, how did that happen?
How did that happen? How did they allow that person into their lives? How did they believe all these lies? So it was less about the podcast and more just about the fact that while we're sitting here living our normal lives, there are people out there being manipulated and controlled and living the strangest, strangest stories.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to get into one of those, a sort of collision between two people who should never have met.
And that book has taken on a life of its own now as well, hasn't it? What's happening with it?
Oh, what's happening with it? Well, it's still selling very well. It's still one of my most popular and well-liked books in terms of a Netflix TV movie. Which, you know, I mean, the whole thing is based around this Netflix documentary that's made about the events of the book. So, of course, Netflix snapped up the rights to it when they became available. It's still going. I mean, it's just a slow, slow process.
Has that happened to you before, that someone has come and said, oh, we want to turn this into X, Y?
Every single one of my books. And it's kind of, I've learned not to get frustrated about it because there's no point, because it's just... They enter into your lives, these TV producers and film producers, and they are genuinely excited. They have genuine passion burning in their hearts for what they think they can do with this. But to actually turn that passion into day one of filming is an impossible journey half of the time. So if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It's always nice when people are excited about your work anyway. So we shall see.
You wouldn't feel weird about someone taking control of your work in that way and changing it?
Only if they made it really good. I mean, if they didn't make it, if they messed it up and it got really bad reviews and all my readers were saying that was terrible, then I'd feel really disappointed. But I'm hoping that my instincts would be correct in leading me to, you know, the right people and making the right kind of trying to be persuasive around the edges of what's going on to make sure that it was true to the book, or certainly as good as the book, even if it's different.
You did a big launch event in Dublin last night. You told me you're back to London then you have to go to the States, then you do your UK tour. How is that side of the business for you?
This side of the business is something that I can't actually believe that this is, again, going back to women in their 50s, this part of my career, this uptick in my career where I'm this intensively busy for certain parts of the year, really only kicked in when I turned 50. I suddenly got really big in America when I turned 50, and my book sales have gone up all around the world. And so this high octane, very intensive promotion and publicity side of my career has really only existed for the last 7 years. And so I'm kind of unbelievably aware of how lucky I am and how incredible it is, because I am living so many writers' dreams by having this side to my career without all the frustrations. And why is nobody talking about my book? And why is nobody buying my book? And why is nobody coming to my book events? So on one hand, it's just the best and the greatest and the most golden thing. On the other hand, it really does take it out of you.
Because like writing, and I've spoken to so many authors who will say this, like writing is sort of an introverted profession. It's quiet. It's just you.
Yes.
It's your editor, perhaps, you know, I don't know, a couple of times a month or whatever. And then you're cast out into the world. Sell it.
Yeah. Pretty much every novelist I know who didn't start out as a stand-up comedian or an actor or somebody who was used to being presenting themselves in an extrovert manner has had to do that. They're all introverts. We're all introverts. And we've all had to learn through the years to show ourselves to the world as extroverts. As we all know about extroverted introverts, you're tapping into an energy source that's quite scarce. It doesn't come easy. Mm. And so you can do it. You can switch it on and you can be that person. And I absolutely love it. I love meeting my readers. I love talking about my books. I love being on stage in front of loads of people. But what it takes out of you is quite sapping, and you do need to restore that.
And you're also having to reveal parts of yourself or things about your life. You know, you'll be asked questions about your family life and your personal life and all that. Is that comfortable for you?
I love that.
Do you?
Yes, I don't have any secrets. I dread somebody one day asking me how much I paid in tax last year at a book event, because I would probably tell them. I just I find it really, really hard to not talk about, you know, the truth and be completely honest about things. But I do know that obviously for some other writers, that's a really big problem.
Because I did read about, you know, you spoke openly about a previous relationship that you had years ago, which involved coercive control.
Yes.
And I wondered how you felt about that afterwards, the reaction to it. Were you comfortable? Or were you happy that you had spoken about that? Because it's deeply personal.
Yes.
Right?
So I was in a coercively controlling marriage in my early 20s, a very long time ago, before there was even the terminology for it. And I have consequently found myself over the years returning to themes of coercive control in many different forms, from cults to relationships. And so I do feel that I need to talk about it. I need to explain why so many of my books revolve around these themes and why I'm so fascinated by it. When I feel uncomfortable about it is when I'm doing an interview, say, and I feel like I'm distilled down to that, and that's the only interesting thing about me. So I can sit with a journalist and talk for half an hour to an hour about my career, about everything. And then the headline is, I was in this terrible marriage where I didn't have a front door key for 5 years, or my husband didn't let me see my family. And that I find really reductive and annoying, because I just think, no, there's so much more to my career than just the fact that I was married to a badden for 5 years, 30 years ago.
Yeah. But I suppose it's useful to know it, because it tells your readers that you understand what you're writing about. You understand what you're exploring that topic coming from a place of knowledge. You know what it feels like.
Yes, exactly.
But as you say, you've done so much more.
I've done so much more. And just to keep bringing it back to that, I'm so happy to talk about it. And I think it is, like you say, it's very important that I do talk about it. But yes, I think that it can sometimes get distilled down to that's the only interesting thing about me.
Now, I want to talk to you about audiobooks and how you feel about them, because I have gone from a place where the first audiobook that I listened to, William Trevor, I liked it, and I went out and bought the book because I felt, I have to own a copy of it. I now have completely changed my view, and I have a book that I'm reading, like a hard copy book like this, and then I have another thing that I'm listening to. Yeah. And if I don't have the thing that I'm listening to on the go, I don't feel right about my life. How do you feel about them?
I've gone one further than you. I used to be a rabid print reader. I would read at bedtime. I would read any time I had the chance to read. And then something happened during COVID times where I developed a smartphone addiction. So all the time that I used to use to read books, including at bedtime, I was now staring at my phone. And I've never managed to overcome that. And I suddenly realised the only time I was reading was on holiday. And you can't be a writer and not read. So I thought, I'm going to try an audiobook and let's see how I get on with that. And yeah, it's completely revolutionised my reading now. I've always got an audiobook on the go. And that's now how I read. So I'm a huge audio
fan.
They're
getting fancier though, aren't they?
Oh,
like you've got to pull in the big names now to narrate your books.
Yes, absolutely. Do you know who's narrating this one? It could have been her. James Norton. Yes. James Norton and Leslie Sharp.
Incredible.
And also half the Fox acting dynasty as well are doing some of the subsidiary characters. So we've got a different voice actor for every single character in the book, including people who've only got a page. The whole thing, there's going to be some theme music. It's the whole bells and whistles. It's quite remarkable.
It turns it into a radio play or a drama, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly like the ones our parents used to listen to in the car when we were going on long car journeys. So it's play for the day. And it's exactly what it feels like.
And
now,
does it sound like it should when you listen to it?
Yes. Well, I haven't listened to this one yet. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to listen to this one. It takes quite a while for the whole production thing to pull itself together.
Because sometimes, and I don't know if you experience this, but I listen to a book and the narrator mightn't suit me.
Yes.
And I have to not listen to it anymore.
Yes, I have one nameless female narrator who I will not actually buy the book if I see that she's narrating the book because she annoys me so much. Completely nameless. So yes, if it's the wrong narrator, that can be really, really quite upsetting. And I feel really sad for the writer that they've been given a duff narrator.
Whereas I go chasing Jesse Buckley. Yeah, books. I chase Richard Armitage, but it doesn't matter what he's reading.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah. Yes.
Like I'm there. I listen to the whole thing. Doesn't matter if it's absolute dredge. I'm there for it.
So 100%.
Completely addicted. So what... When you're in this period of promotion, then are you not writing?
Yes. So my actual official contractual deadline for the book that's going to be published next summer is the 17th of July. But there's just no way. I'm not doing any writing between now because my publicity touring starts last night and me coming back from my UK tour. So my own deadline is before this all starts. So I finished my next book. I finished it last Friday.
Gosh. And is it one a year?
It's one a year, yes.
That's a lot.
Although I've actually, going back to audiobooks, I've done two this year. I've written two books since I delivered It Could Have Been Her last summer, because I've also written a novella for Audible, which goes straight through. It's an Audible original. Mm-hmm. It's called All She Wants for Christmas. It comes out in November. And it's a 40,000 word short book that goes straight to the recording studio.
And will you ever retire? Will you ever stop?
Well, that's a really interesting question because I'm on a 3-book contract at the moment. My delivery date for the final book is July the 17th, 2028, which is 2 days before my 60th birthday. And I think there's something really kind of auspicious about that. And I can't quite get my head around what it means. Does it mean that I should be slowing down? I don't know. So, yes, I'm going to see how I feel when that last book is delivered.
But if the ideas are there, if the inspiration is there, why not?
Why not keep going? And they do say that writers can just keep going forever. So, you know, it's just the tone, speed, intensity of that keeping going. Do I want to be the big book every single summer, the huge tour every single summer, that pressure every single year? Or would I like to just take my foot off the gas a little bit and just sort of write a book when I feel like it? Yeah, probably not.
Well, we will see. Lisa, absolute pleasure to have you in. Thank you so much for being with us. Lisa Jewell's book, It Could Have Been Her, is out now. You'll probably see it in your bookshop windows. It's on display, beautiful green and gold cover, and it's fabulous. And it kept me up way too late, but I'm not going to hold that against you. So nice to meet you.
Thank you, Lisa, for coming in.
We'll take a break.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.